Okay, in which case we might move on to one of the substantive issues that obviously the trustees actually did talk about in their January meeting, which is, and for now for us to be appraised of where it's at and provide advice on a number of the matters that have come up in terms of the review of the structure and effectiveness of the foundation. And I think David and Yael between them are going to take us through the report around where that is at. There are a number of questions posed in there seeking advice from the Advisory Council. Most of them will be taken effectively as we go through the paper, but there are a couple of those questions that will effectively go to the breakout sessions, which will happen immediately after this session, and David will allude to those as we go through and to how we will deal with that. And also, as I said at the beginning of the meeting, Massa is here particularly around and to add to comments made in that report that David will talk about in relation to the monitoring board, and certainly I think would value any comments that we have in relation to those that have been raised by our constituents in the submissions. So that is why he is here. He has taken time out from sitting on an aeroplane, I think would be the fair way to say, from the discussions we had at lunch, Massa being here. So thank you very much for taking the time to be here. So I might just hand over to David to take us through this very important subject.
Thank you, Joanna. And apologies for sending you a bumper pack of papers on this issue, but as you see, there's been quite a substantial response to the trustees' review. And I'd just like to thank Sarah Geisman, who sat on my right here, who's been working with me on this. She decided that working on the Leases project was too quiet, so I wanted something to prepare her for her days in Harvard that will come in the autumn. Because of the weight of paper, you'll find on your desk, as well as up on the screen, a slide set that we thought would help to get us through this initial session. So in terms of the overview, next slide please, Ada. We'll give you a summary of the feedback received. The trustees, as Michelle alluded to, made a number of decisions at their meeting last month. And then we'll focus on the breakout sessions where we're seeking your advice on a couple of tricky issues that face the trustees, and that's on their own membership and that of the board, in particular around the geographical distribution of the trustees, at-large trustee appointments, I'll explain that as we go along, and the size of the board. So just by means of introduction, we had the request for views published last July, and again, those of you who were here last year will remember the very full session you had on the draft request for views last June, and again, your comments were helpful in helping us to finalise that document. We've had 97 comment letters, around 30 of which have come from the organisations represented on the Advisory Council, so thank you for that. And as I say, at the trustees' meeting, we discussed the feedback and made decisions in a few areas. As you recall, the request for views was split into three main themes, and the first of that was around the relevance of the standards. And at the meeting last month, the trustees made a number of decisions in the basis of the feedback. The first of which, in the request for views, we'd posed the issue of whether the board should extend its remit to cover public sector standards for public sector entities. I think given the changes that have been made in the past year or so to the governance of IPSASB, the view was taken not to extend that remit. And I think for the most part, I think there was only one respondent that actively disagreed. But for the most part, people agreed with that, and I think the trustees said, well, let's bank that one. In terms of wider corporate reporting, there was a reaffirmation for the board strategy of keeping in touch with the IARC, participating in the corporate reporting dialogue, but maybe putting some more modest resource into this area, and Hugh explained this morning the financial reporting initiative that's been set up within the technical team, one of the work streams of which is looking at wider corporate reporting. So that's been taken forward in that context. Respondents were generally happy with the strategy for the IFRS taxonomy, which the trustees were happy to reaffirm. And with thanks to Julie and her committee, we'll be taking up IOSCO's offer to discuss with them how the board might support regulators' efforts to improve digital access to financial reports. And again, given the importance of technology, as Michelle mentioned, we are continuing to take forward work to establish a network of experts in this area. And again, the council's advice as we go through that would be very welcome. In May, we'll come back to whether to expand the board's remit to encompass the not-for-profit sector. The majority said, we can see there might be a role for the board, but given everything on its agenda and its focus on the corporate sector, for-profit corporate sector, and the resources and the resource constraints facing the board, we don't see it as an issue at present. But there was quite a significant minority in a write-in from the sector, including, I have to say, the International Potato Centre, suggesting that it might be a good idea for the board to expand its role. It's raised some interesting issues, and I think the trustees just want to have some further analysis for their May meeting before coming to a decision. So in terms of relevance, that's where we stand. And I'll just pause there to see if anyone has any questions or comments on that. But it's been relatively straightforward, he said, relatively. If no one has any comments or questions. Oh, Gavin.
Just on the not-for-profit issue, I'm just interested in any more colour about the discussion around that. It says here that the trustees have asked for further analysis.
I think what we're trying to do is to get a feel for, there are some very big not-for-profits around the world, that's without question, a number of which actually report now under IFRS. But a number of them have said it would really help in terms of donor requirements for funding and grants, in particular in developing countries. They're looking for a kind of harmonised framework that IFRS or IFRS for not-for-profits could bring. And I think it's in that context that people have been asking, whereas others have said, you know, how big is the sector worldwide? While we appreciate there may be pockets in different parts of the world, taken at a global level, is there sufficient at the moment? There's a slight chicken and egg issue here, I think. So I think we want to understand, you know, try and dig deeper and understand more, and then try to understand, you know, where would the particular issues be? And it might be we need to have a quick chat with IPSASRI, which, for example, has already tackled some of these non-exchange, not-for-profit issues, albeit with a public sector hat on. So that's the kind of work we want to bring back to May, and just to see, well, how much would it entail in terms of resource, skill sets, and so on, and have we got... there will be discussions on funding later on, so... Yeah, have we got the resource and in funding and skills to do that?
Because I get that's interesting, because those are the two elements that I immediately thought of is overlap with existing skill set.
Yeah, yeah.
And indeed, how you're going to pay for it.
Exactly. Yeah. And sadly, there's no one out there saying, here's £10 million. And that kind of concentrates minds as well.
Perhaps very salient that John Stanford now has a comment.
Yeah, I was quite interested in this because there was a discussion at this meeting in November, and I think I was in a minority of about a half in suggesting that this was an issue, not necessarily that the foundation should take on, but that it's an issue which has legs, you know, around the table, unless I misinterpreted. There was a general view that this is not an area that the foundation should be stepping into, or there were a lot of reservations about stepping into that area. So I found the message in the paper really quite interesting. And yes, we have looked at a certain number of these issues from a non-exchange perspective, although we are redebating the extent to which we should move to a performance obligation approach.
Ton?
Yes, thank you. In fact, this debate is about should we expand our customer base or not? And if I look to the responses of the current customer base of the ISB, they clearly say, please do not spend resources on the not-for-profit sector, because there are a lot of things, a lot of issues to be solved for the current customer base. So I would like to echo what was echoed in our letter, not to go into that area at the moment because of the issues that should be solved for the profit sector. Thank you.
Anne.
Contrary to Ton, and this is obviously the issue that the trustees have, I would say that there isn't perhaps as great a leap forward as might be suggested. I currently have a client who is a not-for-profit, a public not-for-profit, a very large institution, and they are looking at all these issues because it's coming from a demand for better governance of the institutions themselves so that they can attract private sector funding as well as public sector funding. And when the accounts are presented, the accounts are either globally, the review has been, they're either IFRS or they're US GAAP with adaptions. But the problem is it's with the adaptions. And therefore, I think it might be worth just investigating the magnitude of the task, because there are problems out there. And as you say, they are very, very large institutions and many of them.
Thank you, Anne. I mean, as David said, you know, it is on the staff to do some more work and go back with the recommendation. And I think, John, salient that you should say that you were the half a person, I'm not sure which half of you, that, you know, was supportive of it from the council meeting. So you have had that prior advice, but then obviously the comments that have been made so far. David?
Thank you. Moving on to the second area around consistent application of the standards, if you could move the slide on, Aid. Thank you. I think there was general support for the efforts of the board and the foundation to help encourage and ensure consistent application. Mixed views on how best to accomplish it. And we touched on post-implementation reviews this morning, as well as TRGs. As well as the importance of a collaboration with other parties. This is the main area, I think, where there's the read across to the feedback to the agenda consultation. So again, the trustees had a summary of the feedback on this area at their January meeting, but we'll get a double feedback summary in May, taking into account the agenda consultation and analysis based on both and where we go from here. So that's more for information. So, I mean, we've touched on consistent application in the discussions this morning, but if anyone else has any burning question or issue to raise now, let me know. Okay. So having done the hors d'oeuvres, we now come to the red meat course. In terms of governance and funding, the third main area in the request for views, pleasing to say that there was general support for the three-tier structure we have of the board reporting to the trustees, who in turn report to the monitoring board. That's good. There were some comments made about the roles of the trustee and the monitoring board in terms of, are the trustees exercising enough oversight over the board, for example, and the kinds of areas of that. Scope and activity and transparency of the monitoring board as well, and Massa is here who can answer any questions anyone might have. What we found was that in terms of proposals around the composition of the trustees. In each of these reviews, we have to ask about the geographical distribution of the trustees. At present, we have 22 trustees, so 6 from each of North America, Europe, and Asia Oceania. We then have 1 from South America, 1 from Africa, and 2 at large. What the trustees have proposed in the request for views was to move to a situation where we have an increase in the at-large. Now, there have been a variety of views expressed by people on that issue. But the phrase we use is a substantial body of opinion amongst the respondents also said, well, hang on a minute. How about those who adopt the standards, those who fund the foundation, should they not have more representation on the foundation and its bodies? Now, traditionally, that has not been the case. There has been a kind of global perspective taken. And so there was some pushback against the increase in the number of at-large, although a number of people did say, yeah, it sounds fine. And the trustees had an initial run round the course and didn't come to any decisions, but considered a number of alternatives that might be done either to stick with the current distribution or to amend it in some way. And this is the first of the issues that we'd like you to consider in the breakout sessions. In terms of the alternatives, you know, alternative A was to say, oh, it's all too difficult, let's just stick to the current distribution in the constitution and leave it alone. Alternative B would be to say, well, let's actually go and increase the number of at-large appointments, which would allow for some flexibility and maybe take into account the kind of people who actually fund the foundation and adopt the standards much more. Some of the respondents were quite direct in saying, in proposing something like that, and saying what this would mean is a reduction in particular in US representation. That went into double figures. A number were less coy and didn't mention any specific jurisdiction, but said there should be a greater link. The third would be to make some other change to the geographical distribution. And one of the cunning ideas proposed by a trustee in January was to say, well, instead of having separate categories for North America and South America, how about one for the Americas? And we have the precedent of that on the ASAF, where we have a geographical distribution on that body, one of which is Americas. And in considering the feedback on the request for views, what we're trying to think about is, should we link membership to funding and adoption in whole or in part? Noting the mixed views and majorities for support, in support for the increase in at-large appointments. So this is one area where I think we would welcome your advice. How important, for example, is increased flexibility in making trustee appointments? And what political, in inverted commas, implications would there be in changing the geographical distribution in, specified in the Constitution? So that's our first area for the breakout session. The second, we flow through to the size and membership of the board. Now, in the request for views, the trustees proposed decreasing the board size from 16 in the Constitution to 13. The board is currently operating with a complement of 14 members. And I think, as the request for views document said, that seems to be working out pretty well. And there are benefits, I think, and Hans would say there are benefits to having a slightly smaller board than having a larger board. So in terms of the alternatives, what we got back was, I think around half were saying, yeah, okay. Others were saying, no, stick to 16. And again, about a quarter were saying, no, why don't you stick to where you are at the moment on 14? And again, we have an implication of saying, because there's the kind of geographical distribution for board members is what would the implications be? Now, in going down from 16 to 13, the trustees' proposal was, well, just take one each off Europe, Asia, Oceania, and North America. But the same considerations around adoption funding representation come into play for the board as well as for the trustees. Maybe less so than for the trustees, because I think the primary consideration for the appointment of a board member remains their technical expertise and professional experience. And the geographical distribution was brought in following a previous review back in 2008-2009, I think to try and ensure that there was a geographical spread of board members, maybe partly to avoid the perception at, earlier in the board's life of maybe too Anglo-Saxon a focus. But anyway, we are where we are in terms of the constitution. So again, you know, should we be looking at the board membership with the same consideration as we do for the trustee membership? And where would you come down on in terms of board size? 16, 14, or would you be happy to go along with the suggestion made in the request for views of having a board of 13? And that's the second issue for the breakout sessions. Before we do that, I'll just wrap up Ada for the final slide and tell you now that in terms of next steps, we'll go back to the trustees in May with a full analysis and proposals for constitutional change. We'll have to assess whether any further due process is necessary. And then, as I said earlier, we'll include analysis of feedback from the agenda consultation and any feedback from this council. And as I say, we'll be back in June to the council. That finishes my thing. I don't know whether, Massa, you want to say anything or just be happy to take questions.
Thank you, and thank you for having me here. Just one word on what we consider as the monitoring board's role here. That is, I'm aware that in the trustees' review, the monitoring board itself was not necessarily the direct subject was under the placed under the coverage of the review itself. But we at the monitoring board are quite aware that any changes made in the context of the review with regard to the governance framework or the structure would certainly affect the monitoring board because, of course, the monitoring board is an integral part of the governance framework itself. And therefore, any consequent need to change any existing arrangements around the monitoring board structure and or functioning would not be exactly in the scope of the review, but if they were raised and if those suggestions or recommendations were considered appropriate, we will certainly consider it at the monitoring board in the course of the finalization of the trustees' review. And for that matter, anything that would cover that aspect or the role of the monitoring board would be subject to a separate public consultation. And that is also why the monitoring board itself decided not to write a comment letter to the trustees because we find ourselves as more in the role of actually receiving comments from the public, and I do find many comments received in those comment letters. We are quite sensitive to some of those critical comments around the monitoring board's transparency or on its visibility, on its role, whether it is playing its role properly. But we are quite determined to improve on those points, having received those comments in the context of the review. And so today, my role is principally to answer any questions that you may have or to listen to your comments, and I will certainly bring them back to the monitoring board. Thank you.
Thank you, Massa. And I think perhaps what we should do now is just to consider the monitoring board before we come back to any further comments and go to the breakout session around the rest of the review, excuse me. So are there any questions of Massa around what's come out in terms of the monitoring board or that he could help with and or any comments? Neither. Oh, Goro, sorry.
When the at the last meeting that the you told us that the monitoring board has been quite busy on the discussing about their requirement for the membership, but the now that the you are shifting to the monitoring board's regular role to monitor the trustees, and this change has already been occurred, and also that you are talking about, you told us that you are planning to increase the transparency of the monitoring board's activities, and could you tell us that what was your achievement to date?
Either way, thank you very much for that. But it is all a work in progress, of course. But one thing we've been discussing at the Monitoring Board, that I'm under some control of the Monitoring Board members' representatives around the table here. But we are now trying to structure our work so that we have an annual work plan that will be that can be read in conjunction with the trustees' annual work plan, and have more interaction with the trustees in respect of the activities of the foundation. With regard to the means of providing transparency, we've already tried to enhance our visibility online, but probably there is more that we can do to improve our transparency by way of either our homepage or any other means of communication. And certainly coming to those meetings is a part of raising our visibility and accountability. At the same time, I should really mention that we are quite aware that we need to respect the not just the accountability of the standard setter, but also its independence. And therefore, while there are certainly public interest issues that we need to discuss at the monitoring board, and we will be doing that in the future, we will always be mindful also of the fact that we cannot be seen as overly intrusive on the independence of the standard setting process.
Thank you, Gora, for the question, and Massa, your response there. No other comments or questions for Massa in relation to the monitoring board? Okay, in which case, David, I might, before we go into the breakout sessions, just anything else in terms of, other than in relation to those governance issues, are there any other matters that the council would like to give some thoughts in terms of further work that is being done over the next few months before May, or any questions in relation to the full suite of documents that we have in front of us, or what David has said? Julie.
Just a question. A couple of times in the documents, it referred to the well, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but I think it cascades down to the question of trustees and board members. It referred to the trustees had considered the funding model and decided to continue with a GDP allocation formula. But the paper didn't say why, like it didn't sort of get into the line of thinking that fed into that. So I was curious what it was, if there's sort of a short version of that. The reason I ask is, to me, if there is a particular strategic line of thinking behind that, then even though it's about funding, it potentially cascades down into questions like of trustees and board members. I mean, if there's a particular view about how to allocate the, you know, costs and benefits and opportunities of IFRS around the world, one of them is funding, but other ones are the ones we're going to immediately discuss. So I wondered what the background was in order to know whether I should be making any such connection with the immediate questions we have. So in a nutshell, the question was, is there a particular line of thinking behind continuing with GDP in terms of how that, the philosophy of the foundation, that would be helpful to know.
Michelle, would you like to respond to that?
There hasn't been a in-depth rethinking of the analysis we made a few years ago when we tried to design the present arrangement. We, at that time, said that we were seeking a balance between three pillars. One was the so-called publicly sponsored funding, which we would like to see around two-thirds of the funding of the organization, which is not the case today. Another one would be the funding by firms, enlarging the number of firms and trying to bring in second-tier firms, which has been the case partly. And the third one being, in brackets, the commercial activities where we consider that we're not delivering a public good for free, but doing some kind of activity which deserves appropriate compensation. So the three-pillar system has not been reconsidered. With regard to the first one, the first pillar, we had at that time analyzed in depth different criteria, and we have not considered that this should be changed, because the different criteria we could use had pros and cons. Some of them were extremely volatile, and it seemed to us that the simplest one was the GDP. Now, we know that there are other possibilities. Some people have mentioned, why not market capitalization? It is true that initially IFRS were mainly, and still today, aimed at listed companies, but after all, we are developing SMEs accounting standards also. So market cap is both very volatile, and unfortunately, we know a period of time with this volatility has rather increased than diminished, and is not necessarily representative of the global reach of the standards. Some had considered GDP per capita. There were possibilities there also, but again, it creates a situation where the distribution is probably not ideal. So we adopted the GDP criteria years ago. We have not contemplated the possibility to change it, really. And of course, you could plead for all sorts of criteria, and international organizations know how to develop all sorts of criteria. But I think we will stay where we are, really. And there is no direct link with the, in brackets, political discussions we've had. And this is part of the issue which David rightly presented to you.
Julie, I hope that answers this question effectively. And we have got a session a little bit later on funding, but it isn't, again, to second guess the criteria. So as Michelle says, that being fixed, and I think therefore we go into these sessions with that knowledge.
I just add one word, which is that, I know that this is always very touchy, but when we are talking about funding, I mean, if we were the IMF, the amounts would be an issue per se. May I remind you that we are dealing with £25 million, which means that for the huge majority of countries, the amounts at stake are way below £1 million. So we shouldn't make too much of a technical issue, of this issue, which is rather a small issue when you come to think of it. It's always difficult to say that, but that's the truth. I mean, many countries that unfortunately do not contribute today should pay, according to our criteria, let's say £100,000. So the issue of the criteria, the repetition, is interesting per se intellectually, but we are dealing with reasonably small numbers.
Yeah, that's very helpful, because in essence it's more the practical considerations versus it was a driving philosophy around the organization. That was what I just wanted to get clarity on, that we should somehow factor into these other questions.
It's not as complex as the funding of the EU.
Any other comments or questions or clarity as much as anything else before we move into those breakout sessions? Okay, so we have, effectively, we've got those two questions, one in relation to membership of the trustees and the other membership of the board. And it's probably useful that we actually do use, and I don't think the slides have numbers on them, but on page 4 and 5 of the slide pack that is set out there as what we take into the actual breakout sessions. And I think it is, and I will remind us in terms of the thinking here, as David alluded to in that discussion, that there have been a number of, or a significant number of variations, if you like, on a theme in terms of thoughts around this, that us as providing advice from our global networks, and yes, we are here as representatives of different bodies, but I think it really is important that we are thinking in terms of these recommendations around what is best for, if you think about our overall objective, what is best in relation to the IFRS standards and the adoption and of those IFRS standards in terms of these structures, and in particular, the sustainability of any thoughts or recommendations that we might make. So trying to put aside maybe some subjective biased comments that inevitably we all have, and trying to really think what is the best for the organisation as a whole and is actually sustainable and perhaps won't change, as circumstances change on an annual or biannual or whatever basis.